This is the son of PCJ.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us once again. Today we're going to talk about the biggest scandal to hit the BBC in 50 years. Reports of child sexual abuse have surfaced around one of the BBC's most popular personalities. The allegations are so severe that the credibility of the BBC is at stake. We also have a look at this week's propagation forecast. This is Media Network Plus, the show that brings you the backstory of the story and the story of the backstory. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
France 24 journalist Sonia Draidi filed a police complaint with Egyptian police on Saturday, a day after she was assaulted while reporting on a protest in the capital Cairo's Tahrir Square. Draidi had just finished giving a live news report around 10:30 p.m. on Friday for France 24's French-language television when a crowd of men teamed around her, shoving and grabbing her body. After a tense few moments, Afir Khaled, a correspondent for France 24's English-language television, was eventually able to rescue Draidi from the crowd. On Saturday, France 24 announced that both journalists were safe and in good health. The United States broadcasting voice in Russia will soon be silenced following Moscow's ratification of a new law that will force the legendary broadcast company to abandon the Russian airwaves. Radio Liberty, a division of the U.S.-funded Radio Free Europe, recently fired a large portion of its staff after the passage of a Russian law prohibiting foreign-owned media outlets from broadcasting on medium-wave frequencies. The unexpected mass layoffs came as a shock to RL journalists and Russian human rights activists alike, and spurned accusations that the Obama administration is now toeing the Russian President Vladimir Putin as he seeks to silence the democratic voice that helped topple communism. The timing of it, the way it was done, and the lack of explanation sends an unfortunate message, said David Kramer, the president of the human rights organization Freedom House. It creates the impression, whether intended or not, that the U.S. is pulling out of Russia, and that is not the impression we want to leave. The Associated Press has expanded its commitment to social media and user-generated content as the global news-gathering resources promote Fergus Bell to the newly created position of Social Media and UGC Editor International. Fergus established a network of sources in Syria that could depend on for material and help set in place the multi-layered verification process involving AP Television, the Middle East Desk regional and linguistic experts, and the Nerve Center. With his international focus, Bell will remain based in London and report to the head of AP Television and the new division. A 40-year-old Ukrainian journalist collaborating with several Russian news outlets went missing in Syria. Colleagues and relatives believe she may have been kidnapped. Anhar Kacheva is a Ukrainian citizen and now lives in Moscow. Since the ongoing conflict in Syria began in 2011, she has collaborated with several Russian news outlets, including RT. She was an outspoken supporter of Bashar Assad's government and frequently criticized opposition forces, which may have led to the reason for her possible kidnapping. And finally, the Democratic Action Party will distribute portable shortwave radios during a campaign to longhouses in the parliamentary areas. Brand chief and DAP candidate Sidi Aman Leon Jemat Donald said he had taken delivery of 150 radio sets. He said this would enable longhouse dwellers to listen to Radio Free Sawaka. Campaigning via the radio has started, and it is the cheapest and arguably the most effective weapon. According to reports from the ground, Radio Free Sarawak is so popular that individuals in the long houses would crowd around the radio to listen to the negative news which affects their lives but never gets reported in the mainstream media. Many of them said they would prefer to postpone their dinners than miss the daily live broadcast. He also added that the branch is conducting voter registration at the same time. And with that, we conclude this look at some of the headline stories from media this week. If you wish more information on these and other stories, I invite you to check out the Kim Andrew Elliott blog at kimandrewelliott.com. You can also find a link for them at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com. I'm Keith Powell.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM, Sky Digital, and through PCJ's partner stations.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. How are you today? It so happens that yesterday on our edition, the Christmas edition, everybody shouted Happy Christmas. And so everybody says got the needle and they want to shout something. So how's about, and here all at home, how's about after 1, 2, 3 shouting Happy Boxing Day? 1, 2, 3. Happy Boxing Day! So, I'll tell you what we'll do now.
The biggest scandal to hit the BBC has shaken up many employees at Britain's public broadcaster, from programming all the way to top management. It started a year ago when BBC Newsnight was planning to air a program to look at allegations that popular personality Jimmy Savile sexually abused children for more than 40 years, sometimes on BBC premises. The editor of the program cancelled the broadcast shortly before it was scheduled to air. Meanwhile, private broadcaster Channel 4 did their own program on the story. After it aired, more allegations surfaced, causing questions to circulate about how much and who at the BBC knew about Sir Jimmy Savile and what he was up to. Was there a cover-up by management to protect an iconic persona the BBC created? And does this story represent an isolated case of abuse at the BBC, or is it part of a much larger problem, one woven invisibly into the fabric of this venerable institution? Keith joins us now for more. Now, there are some very ugly allegations, however, and he's passed away now, but since his death, there have been some pretty ugly allegations surrounding him that have come out of the woodwork.
Well, the allegations of sexual abuse involving underage girls, I mean, these allegations go back many, many years, to the 1960s, in fact, and even before that when he was working as a club DJ. And for most of the time within the BBC and other places that he worked, it was rumors. But, you know, a lot of people will say, well, sometimes in every rumor there's also a little bit of truth at the same time. So these rumors, all of a sudden, after he passed away, people started coming forward with their stories. So right now in the UK, there's a big sexual abuse scandal, not just of girls, but also of boys, aged between the age of 13 and 15, that happened allegedly on BBC premises and involving Jimmy Savile.
So you said now people are coming forward, but at the time, people didn't say anything?
Well, not that people said anything, but there was a structure. You know, in Britain, I think what happened is that because of the public image that he had, because he did a lot of work for charity, you know, it was the kind of thing like we've seen this happen before, where a lot of victims of very serious crimes, it could be rape or sexual harassment, won't say anything because they feel that if they did say something and they came out with it, people would say, oh, you're not telling the truth, it's impossible, and just kind of push it aside. Of course, people's attitudes in that respect have started changing around the world, but concerning Jimmy Savile, this was one of the concerns that a lot of people who were abused by him, not just people who were abused by him, but also people that had seen some strange activities take place were reluctant to come forth with. Because in the UK, Jimmy Savile was, well, untouchable, you know. But this whole thing, Paulette, has opened up a can of worms. I mean, now it's not just about Jimmy Savile and the abuses that allegedly took place at BBC premises. It's gone even further than that.
In what way? What do you mean by that?
Well, people now are starting to question what the BBC and BBC executives knew about what was going on. A lot of people that work at the BBC, who had been working at the BBC for many years, people who had retired maybe a number of years ago, are all coming forward now saying, well, you know, these were rumors that we heard, but we didn't believe it. That was one thing that they're saying. The other thing that they're saying is in occasions where they did bring it to the attention of the hierarchy at the BBC at the time in the 70s and 80s and even 90s, that they were sort of laughed off and just sort of, humored about it and say, oh, they're just rumors.
And so now presumably they feel that it's safe now to come forth and tell their story.
Well, they feel that it's safe to come forth and tell their story. I mean, there was one woman on one of the programs that Jimmy worked on, and she had witnessed something when walking into his dressing room. And when she brought it to the attention of the production manager, it was just kind of, nobody took her seriously. But she said everybody had talked about it, but she didn't believe it. And then when she brought it to the attention of the production assistant, the production manager, I should say, a few weeks later, she was dismissed without any reason.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, she's not the only one that has come forward with this story. You know, and it's the kind of thing, like, you know, involving, high-profile cases sometimes, because it's covered so much in the media, you know as well as I do, that sometimes people that had no involvement in the case will come forward and make some type of claim.
Right, right.
You know, but these are people who, you know, they started coming forward before it got the media attention that it has been getting. And before it was covered so widely, but everybody's story is exactly the same.
So is there any fallout then at the BBC?
Well, the fallout at the BBC is the BBC now is being scrutinized, because last year, in 2011, the BBC have a news magazine called Newsnight. One of the reporters that works on Newsnight, she had heard these rumors for many years, and she said, you know what, I'm going to launch an investigation to see if these rumors are just gossip or they're based on any type of fact. Now, Savile had just passed away a year before that. So she was preparing this documentary that was supposed to air I think it was the month of October 2011. And the editor of Newsnight canceled the project. He didn't put it on hold. He said, stop investigating it.
Why is that?
Well, this is where it gets odd, because the reporter that was working on it, her producer, they were trying to find an answer why. There were a lot of discussions that took place between her and the editor of Newsnight. And the editor eventually sent her, after some email correspondence, which now has been made public, even the BBC has released these emails publicly, basically saying that he had been getting pressure from the BBC bosses not to run it because the BBC had some special tribute programs at the end of the year paying tribute to Jimmy Savile. He also said that there wasn't enough evidence to back the claims that were being done by this documentary, despite the fact that they were following a 2007 police investigation of Jimmy Savile.
So it was all about optics at the BBC level, executive level.
Yeah. Now, what happened, though, is after the whole thing was canned, Channel 4, which is one of BBC's commercial competitors, did a documentary that aired a few weeks ago about the allegations themselves. They had a criminal investigator doing the documentary. And then it came out afterward. People saying, well, wait a second. Channel 4 did this. Why did the BBC shelve this program? Why did they do it? Were they trying to cover up something, or did they shelve it because certain people were afraid that maybe, you know, maybe because they'd been there for a long time and they knew Jimmy Savile, were they part of, you know, trying to not get these rumors out the way they have been out?
So this story then about canceling that documentary sounds like it's pretty big as well, and a big element in this story.
Well, you see, this is where the attention is focused on now. You know, why did the BBC cancel this documentary? Now, Panorama, which is a well-known documentary program at the BBC, earlier this week did a documentary about why Newsnight canceled the documentary. And it is a tale of so many twists and turns that at the end of it, they even said themselves that they don't even have a conclusion yet.
Wow. So it looks, sounds like a lot of people covering for themselves.
Yeah. This week, George Entwistle, who's the director general of the BBC, was summoned to a parliamentary hearing into finding out why the BBC editor of Newsnight, who, by the way, since has stepped down from that position, why did he stop the airing and the production of this program looking into Jimmy Savile? And this is what he had to say.
There's no question in my mind that this is what we now know happened is a very, very grave matter indeed. For somebody to have worked for the BBC and at the BBC over a number of decades and to have been responsible for what the police describe as an unprecedented scale of child sexual exploitation, there is no question in my mind this is a very grave matter indeed, and I would seek to show that that the response the BBC has made recognises that gravity.
I think we would all accept that, but you will also be aware that the concern about the handling of this matter by the BBC is raising very serious questions about potential suppression to avoid embarrassment, and obviously some of the allegations which were broadcast last night on Panorama. I mean, would you accept that this has not been handled well by the BBC in the last few weeks?
No, I wouldn't accept that. I would accept that there have been times when we have taken longer to do things than in a perfect world I would have liked. But I think if you look at what we've achieved since the scale of the crisis became clear, I think you would see that we have done much of what we should have done and done it in the right order and with proper respect paid to the right authorities. So if I can start by saying the first thing we did was for me to make contact personally with the police.
Now, Keith, we were talking earlier off air about the culture of sort of silence at the BBC and how difficult it is for people to come forth with their stories. In society in general, it's still hard for victims of sexual abuse to come forward. There's still that stigma and a sense of embarrassment and shame, but there's more to it at the BBC. You were saying that actually their hands, everybody's hands are tied to come forth and blow the whistle on people like Jimmy Savile.
Well, you know, the BBC structure and the organization itself, you know, it's an organization that's respected the world over. And again, I want to stress right now, I am not criticizing the BBC. I still have a lot of respect for what they do. You know, the BBC has always had a history, for example, of it being very difficult for women to move on within the corporation.
Proverbial glass ceiling.
Exactly. Now, Margaret Howard, I'll just tell you quickly about her. Margaret Howard was one of the presenters of the BBC. She was first a studio manager, and eventually she went to doing on-air programming and reading news, and they would not allow her to read news because she was a woman.
Wow.
And there have been a number of cases in the last few years even where, oh, you know, she's showing a little bit of gray hair. If she doesn't change it, we have to dismiss her. And this still goes on today, you know, in this decade, 2011, 2012.
Wow.
Now, you think, go back more than 20 years ago and imagine what it would have been like for a woman to become a BBC executive in the late 1980s, despite the fact that she'd had a number of years of television experience. Well, that was the case with Janet Street Porter, who became a BBC executive in the 1980s. And she talked on a BBC programme in Manchester about the culture that existed at the BBC and about Jimmy Savile.
When I went to the BBC as an executive in the late 80s, about 1987, I was aware of the rumours about Jimmy Savile. I was also aware of rumours about other people. There was a culture, and it was a generational thing. In areas of light entertainment, behaviour was tolerated. I feel the reason why these women never came forward before was nobody would have believed them, because Jimmy Savile raised so much money for charity, and he used the money that he raised for charity as a bargaining power to buy silence from national newspapers. And if ever there was a time when someone might have blown the whistle on him, he would threaten those newspapers and those reporters that charity money would not go to those hospitals. And I know a female journalist that went to interview him that said straight away, I was really uncomfortable. His behaviour was totally inappropriate. But women, you know, we're going back, you know, to the late 80s. Even then, entertainment on television is a very male-dominated area. If you just wouldn't have had a voice. I feel the women have come forward now because he's dead. Because it's just shocking. But there's no doubt in my mind that it happened. No doubt at all.
And is it right that it should be investigated now?
Absolutely.
The question is because
I don't want to talk about people who are around now, but we want to send out a really clear message that if you're underage and if someone's in a position of power because they're a well-known TV presenter or producer or director who can hand out fame to a younger person, you must not abuse your position. Okay. A lot of people knew about it at Television Centre. A lot of people at the BBC knew what was going on.
When you say knew, because a lot of people talk about, I'd heard rumours that and this and that. You're saying
well, it was certainly more than rumours. It was certainly more than rumours because it was something that went on a regular basis. But, you know, the women involved were just girls, and some of these girls came from very vulnerable situations. They came from special schools. They came from the places that Jimmy was supposed to be helping. Who would have believed them? And some of the women have said that when they did say something, they were punished.
Well, after hearing that, Keith, I have to say that it dispelled all of my skepticism about this potentially being just a witch hunt at the BBC or against the BBC executive, because I can certainly relate to what she says. Corporate culture, it exists around the world and it is just so prevalent.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. We'll now find out from our propagation editor, Dan Hensley, what we can expect over the next 7 days for propagation.
Here's propagation for the week from October 27th to November 2nd, 2012. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts off at 130 on October 27th, dropping 5 points on October 28th to become 125. Yet another 5 point drop on October 29th, bringing the 10.7 centimeter flux to 120. October 30th through November 1st, 2012, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 110. The final 10.7 centimeter flux reading for the week on November 2nd at 100. The A index is 5 all week long and steady, with a steady KP index of 2 from October 27th to November 2nd. Sunspot 1591 is passing out of view, with 1596, 98, and 99 in view. No large coronal holes on the Earth-facing side of the Sun this week. NOAA forecasters estimated a 75% chance of M-class solar flares and a 20% chance of X flares between October 24th and October 25th. The most likely source is active sunspot AR1598. 1598 erupted on October 23rd at 0322 UTC, producing a strong X1 class solar flare. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory recorded the extreme ultraviolet flash. Radiation from the flare created waves of ionization in the upper atmosphere over Asia and Australia, the daylit side of Earth, and possibly HF radio blackouts at high latitudes. The blast did not, however, produce a significant coronal mass ejection. No auroras are expected to result from this event. This is the fourth significant flare from AR-1598 since it emerged over the southeastern limb only 3 days ago. This means more flares are probably in the offing, and they will become increasingly Earth-directed as the sunspot turns toward our planet in the days ahead.
And with that, we've come to the end of the program for another month. Your comments and suggestions are always welcome, so please feel free to drop us a line. Our email is mnp@pcjmedia.com. And you can also keep track of us on Facebook and Twitter. Just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find the links there. So on behalf of Dan Hensley in Chicago, USA, and Keith Perron in Taipei, Taiwan, this is Paulette McQuarrie in Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and see you soon.